Welcome to the 5 o'clock show. It's time for Common Sense. Now, it's Katz and Cosby with John Katzimatidis and Rita Cosby, standing for truth, justice, and the American way, bringing common sense to the world. Now, here's John Katzimatidis and Rita Cosby.
I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Well, we have a full studio today, even though it's a Friday, almost summertime.
That's a fitting song.
Judge Weinberg, Ed Cox, Governor Patterson, are we on the eve of destruction if things don't go right? Any opinions?
Absolutely have an opinion. If we keep going the way we're going, we are on the eve of destruction.
Ed Cox?
Don't think so. Russia has agreed with China they're not going to be using nuclear weapons. It's not going to be ultimate destruction, just piecemeal destruction.
Just merely destruction?
Yes, exactly.
Just a merely destruction.
Piecemeal, bite by bite.
Piecemeal destruction.
Kick in the butt. Piecemeal destruction.
Governor Patterson?
Not sudden.
I agree with Ed. I think that this is a very difficult time, but there are a lot of ways if we as a country operate correctly and start to change some of the way we've been acting. I don't think it's as bad as many do.
Governor, not with this administration.
Yeah, by the way,
I
am worried, as Secretary Pompeo said.
I would say one more thing.
Go ahead.
Are we on the eve of destruction if President Biden gets reelected?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and here's where I feel it, you guys. What is happening on our campuses is really scary to me. Some of the rhetoric that we've heard, I agree with what Mike Pompeo, who we've had on quite a bit, who is so great that there's something within this country. It frightens me to see some of these protesters shouting death and destruction, pro-Hamas. And now we're learning today, Judge Weinberg, that the student leader of the Columbia protest, they're refusing to leave at this hour.
He said, you're lucky I'm not going out and killing Zionists. Then that's free speech?
Killing.
He said, you're lucky I don't go out there and kill Zionists.
And over and over again, we're seeing people now saying, we love Hamas. Hamas is great. This is really scary, John.
If you have people that want to kill Americans, burn the American flag, and they're non-citizens, should they be deported?
Well, if they take the action to do it, they should be deported. If they say it, that's a little different because people say a lot of things that they don't do.
What about if they're burning the flag?
When you're asked, that's an action. Rita, when you're asked to swear allegiance to get your citizenship papers, when you're asked to swear allegiance to the United States of America, are these people going to do that?
Governor Patterson, what do you think?
Silence in the room.
I'm sorry. If you're burning an American flag and you are here, you're a non-citizen, that's an action.
If you burn a cross and leave it on someone's lawn, or you burn an American flag, it's considered symbolic. It is not considered a threat.
I agree, but I don't like the action. And I think, to John's point, you should appreciate this country.
It's a good discussion.
It is.
Now, I also want to wish happy birthday to one of our regulars, Ty McCoy, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. He's always with us
Dragon,
on our show.
Dragon, remember. Oh, no, he's not Dragon.
And thank you, Ty McCoy, happy birthday, and West Point graduate, and he's done a lot to help our country, and he still speaks up for his country.
He is great.
Right now we have a little tidbit, and the regular Ted Cruz called me before. He's going to be on my show on Sunday, and he did a little bit tidbit for Friday night. Let's hear from Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz. What is today, Senator Ted Cruz from the great state of Texas? Senator Cruz, the college campus situation is out of control. Some of these people are being paid. It seems like the tents are the same color, the same tents all over the place. How do we determine who's paying these people?
Well, John, what we're seeing is horrific. You're right that there's clearly significant money behind these anti-Semitic protests. There has been considerable speculation that George Soros's networks of foundations is funding it. We know that his network of foundations has funded a lot of anti-Israel activity over the years. Fundamentally, what we're seeing on the campus of Columbia, on the campus of NYU, on the campus of Yale, is absolutely disgusting.
Senator, some of these people are not our students. Some of these people are visitors to the university. Some of these people are illegal aliens. I mean, if these people are threatening the United States of America and they're not legally here or they're visitors, shouldn't they be deported?
Absolutely, yes. Look, it is straightforward how sane, rational administrators, how sane, rational elected officials, how sane, rational law enforcement would handle this. Any so-called protester that threatens violence, that threatens the safety of another student, should be arrested. They should be prosecuted. If they are a student, they should be expelled. If they are a professor, they should be fired. And if they are not American, if they are from a foreign country, they should be deported. When you see radicals that the Biden administration is letting into this country chanting death to Israel and death to America, we have no obligation to welcome people to this country who chant death to America. You don't have an entitlement to come in on a student visa. And if you're here as a radical wishing death on the American people, you need to get the hell out and go back to the country you came from.
Wow, very powerful interview. And John, the rest of it's going to run on the Cats Roundtable on Sunday. And joining us now to talk about all of this is Professor Alan Dershowitz. His new book, of course, is called War Against the Jews. Professor Dershowitz, let's get first to the protest part. You just heard from Senator Ted Cruz saying that if people are expressing sort of animosity to America, and Governor Patterson brought up an interesting point, like what are the layers of what are the actions that should precipitate it? But he says maybe they should be deported if they're here as non-citizens. What can we do and what should we do?
Absolutely. Non-citizens don't have the same First Amendment rights as citizens do. And, you know, Columbia, one of the leaders of the Columbia sit-ins was saying that Jews and Zionists don't deserve to live. And he's lucky I'm not killing them. You know, these are people who are likely to become terrorists, just like in the 1970s. I represented people on First Amendment grounds who were, you know, advocating for the Viet Cong. Some of them became terrorists. Kathy Boudin became a terrorist and killed two police officers in Rockland County and two Brinks guards.
She sure did.
What do you think? What do you think happened to her after she got out of prison? She got a job teaching at Columbia, probably taught some of these students. Her son, who was born, I think, when she was in prison, became the district attorney of San Francisco, who was ultimately recalled and fired. But what do you think he's doing? He's teaching students at Berkeley. A lot of these terrorists, people who were part of the Weather Underground, who turned from advocates of violence into practitioners of terrorism, were absolutely, you know, praised by the media. They were praised in books, in movies. One of them was a close friend of President Obama, Ayers and his wife. These were people who, many of them, crossed the line from advocacy to actual terrorism. And I guarantee you that among the people at Columbia University, there are going to be some people who will become terrorists. When Hamas comes to America, and they will try to recruit some of these people. Just tell us about a synagogue in your neighborhood. Tell us where you can get some bomb equipment. They will join, and some of them will plant bombs. I know. I represented a person who changed from that and became a bomb planter. And it was terrible, terrible. You know, when you defend the First Amendment, sometimes you defend people who ultimately become terrorists, and that's a terrible thing. We have to keep the First Amendment alive and well. But once that line is crossed, we have to jump into the situation and make sure that if they're not citizens, they're deported. And if they are citizens, they still have to comply with the law. And there's a line that you can cross and become a criminal.
So who steps in? You know, it's an interesting point that you just brought up, Professor Dershowitz. Who steps in? Is it the government, that, you know, federal government, the state? Who needs to step in? Because it is getting out of line.
Both have jurisdiction. If it's terrorism, the federal government has jurisdiction. If it's an ordinary crime, the state has jurisdiction. And there are many things that can be done. Short of prosecution and imprisonment, there can be surveillance. There can be putting them on a no-fly list. there are things that can be done within the law, and they can be expelled from private universities. Obviously, the student who said that he didn't think that Zionists and Jews had a right to live and that they should die does not belong to Columbia University. Sorry. Even if he has a free speech right, he doesn't have a free speech right to be a student at Columbia. And Oliver Wendell Holmes once said that about police officers. They have a right to speak, but if they say certain things, they have no right to be police officers. I think the same thing is true of teachers. I mean, we have Professor Joseph Mossad, an intellectual third-rate thug, who, after October 7th, praised Hamas for doing what it's doing. He's a professor at Columbia. I opposed his tenure before he got tenure because he was discriminating against Jewish students in the classroom and calling on them and not letting them speak unless they admitted that Israel was committing war crimes.
Alan, why did it take them 7 months to get rid of him?
They haven't gotten rid of him yet.
Yeah, he's still there. He's still there.
He's still there. I wish they had gotten
rid of him. My understanding is they're getting rid of him.
Joseph Mossad?
Yeah.
Boy, that would be good news, but I haven't heard that. If you can confirm that, that's fantastic.
I
helped to get rid of Norman Finkelstein from DePaul University. They made the decision not to give him tenure, but I gave them all the information about what a horrible scholar he was and what a liar he was.
Absolutely.
And they ultimately didn't give him tenure and fired him. And so, you know, the First Amendment is a two-way street. It's a marketplace of ideas, not just a one aspect. It's not free speech for me, but not for thee. We have the right of free speech, and that right includes calling for discipline against people who have gone too far.
Judge Weinberg.
Judge Weinberg.
Alan, one of my heroes, Justice Robert Jackson, the Supreme Court, famously said, the United States Constitution is not a suicide pact, and people forget that. And for example, when you pick up the newspapers, you find out that the Rockefeller Foundation and the Soros organizations and foundations are funding these people. And foreign money is funding these people. Rockefeller Foundation.
David Rockefeller must be turning in his grave.
One of the Rockefellers, David Rockefeller IV. So what do we do to curb that? Because they're giving the resources and the money for these pre-organized demonstrations that are turning violent and intimidating and denying other people their civil rights.
There have to be congressional hearings as to the source of funding of all of these things. Also, the source of funding of Middle East studies departments, like the one Joseph Mossad is in. They're being funded, many of them, by Qatar and by other Arab and Muslim countries. And they are the ones who support DEI, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is a hotbed of anti-Semitism. And they also support these ethnic identity politics departments that are a source of anti-Semitism. Look, the rot at major American universities goes far deeper. The anti-Israel attitudes are only the most current symptom of a long-term problem that is destroying American universities.
Yeah, and Professor Dershowitz, so I want to switch gears and ask you about Trump, because, boy, it was another hot day in court today. His assistant, Rona Graff, was there. Also, Pecker was up there. So far, I haven't heard anything that constitutes a crime. David Pecker even said, look, Trump sold magazines, so that's why we did positive stories about him.
There is no crime.
Yeah,
there
where do you see it going?
There is no crime. And the Supreme Court decision that Arthur Idella helped bring about yesterday in the Weinstein case, you may love it, you may hate the decision, but it has very strong implications for the Trump case, because basically what the court said, and I was a consultant on the Weinstein case, I helped with the brief and I helped with the oral argument in that case that won yesterday. In that case, the court said, be very careful about admitting evidence that does not directly relate to the crime. And we're seeing that happening in the Trump case in New York. And I suspect the Trump case is already, they've committed reversible error by putting Pecker on when there's no crime.
Professor, how far away are we from the Supreme Court saying something?
Well, they'll say something, and they'll say something in the immunity case that was argued yesterday, and they'll say something in some of these other cases. And I think it's about time that they do let it be known that this is Get Trump. You know, I wrote a book called Get Trump. I didn't make up that term.
It's intentional.
James, that's Bragg. It's very deliberate. They have a goal of influencing the election.
Yes, influencing a presidential election, which which I somebody has to speak up, and the only people we have left to speak up is the Supreme Court.
Yep, let's do it. Let's get it to the Supreme Court. I agree with you. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good. Take care.
Well, you know, we heard what, you know, it's, look, he's 60 years a professor at Harvard. And Cox, when you went to Harvard, did you have him?
No, I did not have him, but everyone knew about the Dersh.
Yeah.
And he heard a lot about him.
Did you go to Harvard, Governor?
I went to his class once when I was at Harvard in 1977.
Oh, wow. And what did you think?
He was just as dynamic then as he is now.
Yeah, he's fiery. I love him.
Legend in his own time at Harvard.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's the best. He's really good.
You know what's going to be interesting, John, to see what happens with the immunity issue also at the Supreme Court. That's one thing, because they had the hearing.
Let me tell you, I'm telling you, our audience, we could have a million people listening on a Friday. You know, if a president has to worry that he's going to get sued afterwards when he's not president.
Or prosecuted.
Yeah, I mean, which is silly, because the president can't do his job then.
You know? Listen, this case before the Supreme Court is very simple. It's not about Donald Trump. It's about the institution of the presidency. And if he did what he did in the course and furtherance of his official duties, that's a absolute bar. He has full immunity. The question is, was in the course and furtherance of his official duties. So what the Supreme Court can do is they can rule that way, send it back to the trial court, and say, we want you to do a hearing on whether this is in the course and furtherance of the official duties.
Right, to decide if it was personal or official.
Exactly.
Right.
So that may be what happens in this case. Me, if I was on the Supreme Court of the United States, I'd throw the thing out entirely.
I'll give you an example before we're going to take a break, but I'm going to give you a quick example that I think it's in the Constitution, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I'm just a grocery man. That if the President of the United States, doesn't it say somewhere that if the President of the United States feels that the election, there was something wrong, he has the right to speak
it's
up about
it? It's part of official duties. It's about election integrity. The President of the United States, as the chief executive officer of this country, when he thinks that may be fraud in an election, he has a right to speak.
Actually, it's going to go beyond just outer perimeter of official duty,
right,
which is the present rule for civil actions against the president.
And Ed, I think that's going to be expanded into the criminal.
But that's where it's going to go back and forth.
By the way, the fact of the matter is when you go after somebody criminally, there should be more protection rather than less in a civil case.
But that's where the question is, too, because it'll probably go back to the lower courts, and then it might delay the January 6th case and the classified documents.
Let's take a break, and we're going to come back with the country's leading economist, Larry Kudlow.
Handling legal matters is stressful. So let the law offices of Frank Bruno Jr. provide you with the insightful counsel you deserve. The law offices of Frank Bruno Jr. has successfully handled thousands of cases for 25 plus years. They focus on elder law and estate planning, but are equipped to navigate you through all stages of family law and divorce to real estate law and probate. The law offices of Frank Bruno. Call 718-418-5000 or visit them at frankbrunolaw.com. That's frankbrunolaw.com. Frank Bruno, he's your numero uno.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Katzimatidis and Rita Cosby. Katz and Cosby on 77 WABC.
And we are back here on Katz and Cosby. By the way, everybody stick with us, because in about 10 minutes, we are going to have New York City Mayor Eric Adams. And there's a lot to talk about.
Give us an update on what's going on in our city.
Yeah, on the city, protests,
everything.
Is this
what you call State of the City?
State of the City, right here on Katz and Cosby.
Just checking out.
Right here.
And about the budget.
And now we have our country's leading economist. We have Larry Kudlow to tell us, where the heck are we? Larry?
Yeah, well, where are we? It's a good question. We saw some stagflation this week.
Now, nobody knows. The average person out there, this is a regular network. It's not the business network. The average person out there doesn't know what stagflation is. Would you tell them?
I'll give it my best shot. So stagflation means a stagnant economy. So 1.6% GDP was very low. It's the lowest in about a year, I think. And inflation means inflation. So when you have slow growth and hotter inflation, that becomes stagflation. How's that?
That is a great.
All right. I give it my best shot. And
that's pretty good.
One of the things it means for ordinary folks is that the Fed is going to have to keep interest rates high for longer because of the inflation problem, which came in for the first quarter at about 4.5%. That's a big number. Their target is 2. I don't think the economy is collapsing, but there's a lot of weaknesses, particularly the business sector is looking very weak. And consumer spending is holding it up. There's a lot of government stimulus, which is unhealthy. So that's one of the issues that we had. The other issue we had this week was a spate of new regulations proposed by the Biden administration. Probably the worst one was shutting down coal and shutting down new natural gas plants because they will not meet the emissions targets. And we had a former EPA administrator on who predicted that in a couple of weeks they're going to actually put out regulations that might shut down many of the existing natural gas plants. So this is very bad because the demand for electricity is rising. Okay, you've got electric vehicles. You've got AI computing power. You've got a lot of chip semiconductor factories being built. Everybody needs more electricity. By shutting down coal, by shutting down new natural gas and maybe existing natural gas plants, and, of course, they've always tried to stop the oil production. They took 13 million acres out of Alaska, can't use that. You're not going to have a supply of electricity. So this leads to really two options. One is utility rates are going to blow sky high, or you're going to have brownouts, or possibly blackouts, but certainly brownouts. You can't cut back electricity in the face of rising demand. This is all being done, by the way, against the wishes, against the decision of the Supreme Court, which last year, you recall, in the EPA versus West Virginia, the Supreme Court ruled you cannot have these regulations unless Congress legislates them. The Bidens are not asking Congress for legislation, and they are going around the Supreme Court decision. So this is a very bad story.
So, Larry, Ed Cox here. It's more than just the EPA. The Labor Department's putting out regulations. The FCC's putting out new regulations. Why are they rushing them out now?
Well, they're rushing them out now because they're afraid Trump's going to win. And they want to try to Trump-proof these regulations, which is silly because Trump will just repeal them. They're executive orders. It's what we did, knocking out 7 regs for every 1 new one. And he'll do it again, and he campaigns on that deregulation. By the way, the FCC one is very onerous. There's an FTC one, too. But the Federal Communications Commission is going back to Obama's net neutrality. What does that mean? It basically means that the regulators will control the Internet. They will control the profit margins like a utility. Oh, yeah. They'll control all the broadband specifications. They'll control all the auctions. Including not only Internet, but the Starlinks satellite stuff.
I guess they didn't make enough contributions.
This is going to really do a lot of damage to the Internet, and it's going to stop 5G and other things. The Trump administration repealed all that, and the Bidens are bringing it back. And then the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, ruled out non-compete clauses. Now, that's very bad because, in these technology companies, if you leave one company and go to another, you usually face a non-compete for many years. Otherwise, you carry the intellectual property with you. So it will do great damage to tech companies, and you'll be this is a case of intellectual property theft. So that's coming from the Federal Trade Commission. So it's, Biden's just going hog wild. He doesn't care about the Supreme Court. You know, you may as well throw in student loan cancellations. The same thing. Supreme Court said no. Biden's trying to do it. Supreme Court says you can't shut down all these power plants because you do not have the emissions authority from Congress. Biden's going to do it anyway. And then he's going on and on. This is just this is the economic version of lawfare. That's what this is.
Wow. Well, Larry, we're going to be listening to you tomorrow on number one, WABC's number one show on at 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock on Saturday. And you've made new record highs. I think you're almost at the Milky Way by now.
Well, thank you,
173 countries, 50 states are listening to you. And I think last month you hit 149 of the 173.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Larry Kudlow, have a great weekend again, and God bless you and God bless America.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. And Rita, you got some hot news to deliver?
I definitely do.
News of the day, sponsored by Goya. Here's Rita Cosby.
Well, as you heard here at the top of Katz and Cosby, former President Trump, he is saying that he is ready to debate Biden anywhere, anytime, any place. In a post on social media, Trump said that he would even debate Biden outside the New York City courthouse today, where the president is on trial. Now, earlier today, President Biden came out and said that he would be happy to debate Trump. It's the first time he's even suggested that he would consider that. Meanwhile, Trump was back in court for his non-disclosure agreement trial, as we were talking about earlier with Professor Dershowitz. Longtime Trump Organization assistant, the executive assistant to the former president, Rona Graff, took to the stand today. Prosecutors are accusing Trump of falsifying business records to cover up payments to adult film actress Stormy Daniels. And hundreds of people across the U.S. have been arrested since protests erupted over the war in Gaza after Israel was brutally attacked on October 7th. Anti-Israeli protests have sprung up across the country at now more than 50 universities. And by the way, the tents are still up at Columbia, even though the president has continued to extend the deadline and say we would like them out immediately. But the protesters keep them up. So who knows where that is headed. And, John, those are our hot, hot, hot Goya stories of the day.
It's a Friday afternoon. Where is the Grimaldi's Pizza?
Yeah. Oh, we got to find out. We've got to find
Anthony.
Out. Yeah. And by the way, a yummy, yummy Goya beans. And also a John.
And those Goya beans are
the best.
Excellent.
And we love Bob Unanue, who does so much,
yes,
too.
Yes, we do.
We have an awesome guest coming up, John.
We have the mayor of the city of New York to give us the state of the city. Stand by after this commercial.
You're commuting home with Katz and Cosby. Now, here's John Katzimatidis and Rita Cosby on 77 WABC.
Well, we are standing by. We're waiting for the mayor to call in. And how about a breaking news symbol?
Yeah, we're going to do that when he calls in.
He's going to be calling in.
By the way, speaking of some news, John, did you see this? President Biden came out and he did an interview with Howard Stern, the radio shock jock. Yes, a hard-hitting interview that he's doing. And he said that, I would be happy to debate President Trump anytime. I'd be happy to.
He forgot to check with his bosses at the White House.
Yeah, because they're not going to. And what do you think, to John's point? I mean, come on.
Like,
what do you think?
He's not going to debate, period.
You don't think he'll
debate? Will they let him out of the basement?
I mean, he said anything that you really believe?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He probably, his bosses are probably going, oh, no!
He'll find a reason not to.
What do you think?
Listen, the truth is, I hope he debates. But
sure.
It's up to you.
Listen, I think America deserves a debate between the two of them, and there's a lot to debate.
Governor,
my goodness.
Patterson, stop laughing, please.
Yeah, what do you think?
I would just like to remind messieurs Katzimatidis and Weinberg and
Iceberg Weinberg,
along with Miss Rita Cosby, that
all this
got said in 2020, and he did debate President Trump, and he'll debate him this year. I guarantee it.
All right.
Absolutely.
Spoken by a true Democrat.
Guarantee it.
And by the
breaking
way,
news,
here we go.
WABC.
Thank you.
And joining us now here on Katz and Cosby is the great mayor of New York City, Mayor Eric Adams. Mr. Mayor, we're glad to have you here.
Thank you so much, Rita, you and Kat. Good to speak with you all the time.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Hey, you know, first off, there's so much to talk about. We've been talking about the protest, but let me ask you first about the budget. What do you think in the state budget? You got a lot of things for New York City, and also the executive budget proposal that you put forward for the city. Tell us what you think are some of the highlights that are going to keep New Yorkers safe.
Well, I think first starting with the state budget, I just cannot say thank you enough to the governor and to Majority Leader Andrew Stewart-Cousins and to the Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty. They saw what the city went through with the influx of 191,000 migrants and asylum seekers, something that was outside our span of control. We couldn't allow them to work. We couldn't stop buses from coming in. We were obligated to give them housing and food and other Bay Essentials. And so they came in and really threw us a lifeline and realized that the city is the economic engine of the state. So they allowed us to really get empowered to go after the illegal cannabis shops. So important. Those cannabis shops have become a magnet for violence and really targeting our children as well. They allowed us to deal with our affordable housing issue of giving us the tools need to build more housing. We're not going to be able to survive with a 1.4% vacancy rate. That is a huge win for us as well. And they gave us the extension of mayoral accountability, something that we needed so badly. We're outpacing the state in reading and math. Chancellor Banks, and I got to tell him to get on the show and share some of the great things he's doing. But these were big victories. And lastly, they allowed us to raise our debt cap, ceiling cap, because we have big projects we have to do, and we need the bond increase to do so. So real wins for us on the state level. And well, as you just indicated, we just announced a $114.5 billion budget for this year. Because of the good economy and just good management principles, as independent financial experts have stated, we were able to really get to the place that we are right now because we started early when we first took office.
Mr. Mayor, has Speaker Hasty and the state done enough for on bail reform and keeping New Yorkers safe? You feel good about it?
Well, when you think of bail reform, you know, I wasn't jumping for joy when the reform package came. But, you know, we have to follow the rules from Albany. The two areas of focus that I think we need to look at is one, discovery. It's a terminology that many people are not aware of. But this is when district attorneys have to turn over, all the evidence in a particular crime and arrest. At first blush, you'll say, okay, well, that's a fair thing to do. It is not when it comes down to mundane things that are really not significant with the arrest. For example, if someone is arrested at a demonstration and you have 100 cops there, every piece of their body camera should not have to be turned over right away. It's just so time consuming, and it's really costing a lot of cases from being dismissed. We think we either need to modify the discovery rules, or it should be funded through the state to give DAs the support they need to fulfill that. It can't be an unfunded mandate. And lastly, recidivism. That's a big issue. The person who shot Jonathan Dillard, our hero police officer, now detective, he was arrested 20 times. And the person who was in the car with him was out on a gun charge. And there was another gun found in the car, which could have been his as well. But we keep seeing these cases over and over again. 542 people arrested, over 7,000 times in the city. Those who were arrested for shoplifting, they were arrested over 7,600 times in the city. 38 people arrested in the subway system for assaulting subway workers only were arrested over 1,100 times. So it's these small number of people who are doing bad things to good people in the city.
And Mr. Mayor, Ed Cox has a quick question for you.
Yes, hi. Mr. Mayor, I agree with you. The legislature, it was a tough fight, I'm sure, but you got the things you wanted from them, especially for Chancellor Banks. I've worked with him on some of his internship programs.
He's a very decent person.
He's doing a great job there, and you got mayoralty to control again. Not 4 years, but 2 years, but still, you got it. But how are you going to be treated by the city council? This is your executive budget. It has to go through a process.
You know, first of all, I didn't even know you were in the studio. How you doing, man? You know?
We got a full house here.
Well, we got Governor Patterson here, too, but we'll see what he has to say.
He's going to say something. I can tell.
the governor will be Governor Patterson will be the first to tell you. I like to do the analogy of throughout the years, the playoff. I mean, it's just a season. Everybody goes in back and forth. They throw different things at each other. But we're in the playoffs right now. And, you know, every year, if you go back, the last two budgets that we managed together, the Speaker Adrian Adams and I, all of the ruckus, it's going to come down to we're going to find a solution. We're going to have a handshake. We're going to deliver for the city of New York. Things like the project she introduced, Project Reconnect, that allow CUNY students who were out for a long period of time to go back and get their college degrees. What we're doing around foster care children paying their college tuition. We have been able to navigate us through our COVID and the migrants and asylum seekers. So, yes, are there 3-4 things we disagree on? Yes, you're darn right. But are there 100 things we agree on? Yes. And that is how we come to a conclusion. And I'm looking forward to coming to a final conclusion and shaking hands in June when we finally settle the budget.
That's a good analogy, the playoffs. Governor Patterson, yeah.
So, Mr. Mayor, I tried to clarify something today. I wrote an article in Politico about the candidate that you've chosen to be the next corporation counsel, Randy Mastro. Now, he's getting a lot of criticism from the city council. I bet that a lot of people who do the criticizing are really reflecting to some of the acrimony in the Giuliani administration. But the fact is, he's a lifelong Democrat and has always been for, you know, very positive and even some progressive causes. I just think that the reason that you and Mayor Giuliani, who obviously had a interest that was sort of perpendicular, would choose the same person to be in such a high place because of the tremendous work he's done over the years.
Well said.
I didn't mean to make you sneeze.
Bless you, Mr. Mayor.
When you're the mayor, your goal is not even to look at party, who's a Democrat, who's a Republican, is who's the best can do the job. Because the complexity of the city is something that you have to look at and how you can manage it. And I know that people are looking at some of his clients. They're looking at the clients that they disagree with. They don't look at the clients that he has done amazing things, including protecting the rights of the Black Lives Matter marchers, what he has done on his role in the Citizen Union. I mean, you have a guy that has done some great things as a lawyer. And I just think it's a slippery slope when you judge a lawyer by his clients, because the goal is due process, and everyone has the right to have an attorney. And that attorney should not be a blame for the actions of the client, because then you have to look at those who commit heinous crimes, murders. We don't demonize the attorneys just because they represent someone who carried out a very challenging crime. I say let it go through the process. If he's the one that we put up, because we haven't put up anyone yet, but if he's the one, let's go through the process of allowing him to interview. And you know what's interesting, Governor? Many people who are critiquing him don't even remember when we talk about Giuliani was 20 years ago?
30.
Exactly.
I want to switch gears up, Mr. Mayor, and also ask you about protests, too, because yes. What can we do to clamp down on some of the protests where obviously there's free speech, but yet at Columbia, the president there has said, okay, we'd like you to be off in 24 hours. They didn't move. Then she extended another 48 hours. They still haven't moved. What can you do? And especially some of these protests have gotten out of hand at some of the schools where we've seen the videos of them chasing police officers, or in one case, there was an officer who was hit with a bottle and a chair. What can we do to get a handle on this before it gets worse?
And I'm glad you said that, because there's something that's taking place right now. We have, I don't think we've ever witnessed in our city. The closest thing I think we witnessed was when Reverend Sharpton was stabbed during, I think it was the Yusuf Hawkins case. We protest in this city, and this is part of our fundamental rights as Americans. That's what makes us really special, is that you have the right to protest the right, as Dr. King once said. But what we're seeing now, I don't ever recall, and maybe you guys can tell me, but I don't ever recall protests where you call for the destruction of a people. Will you celebrate terrorists who committed a violent, barbaric action? To have people that are protesting with signs and chants of destroy Jews, kill Jews, I am Hamas, I celebrate Hamas, that has never happened in this city before. And that is what I find disturbing.
Here, Mayor.
Yeah, New York is we're used to protest. I mean, people protest everything in the city. I like to say 8.3 million people, 35 million opinions. But the hatred we're seeing, and the comfortability of the hatred, that's what's getting me. People are comfortable with being anti-Semitic and calling out these hateful things. And then you can't harass students, because if you harass students, and I say to the African-American listeners on this show, you know, just go back and look at Little Rock, Arkansas. See those young children trying to go to school, and we needed the National Guard to protect them. You know, so let's replace the term Jewish and put any other group. How would we feel if someone was saying to African Americans, kill African Americans, or kill Italians, or kill Sikhs, or any group? Put ourselves in that place. And that is why we need to be very clear on what's happening here and the level of anti-Semitism that's going to be, that seem to be pervasive throughout this city and country, if not the globe. And so people must understand, yes, we want to go in and clean up those tents. The police department wants to do it. They did it for Columbia. When they first asked us to do it, because it's private property, we just can't go on. We did it for NYU. We thought that they were in a place where they wanted us to come in and clean up those camps. They made the determination yesterday that they don't want us to come in right now. We cannot break the law to carry out the law. It's required that we get permission from the heads of the school to go in. Right now, they have not given us the permission. I don't think they're going to be able to negotiate with these unrealistic and anti-Semitic body of people that I think many of them are not even connected to this issue. They are those who are professional protesters, outsiders, anarchists who come in and just want to disrupt the good order of this city.
Judge Weinberg?
Mr. Mayor, good to talk to you again. First, I want to commend you for your moral leadership. In a country that doesn't have moral voices fighting to protect all people, I want to commend you. That makes you a national leader on this issue. I say to the university presidents, the first time they start springing up these camps, you move quickly and decisively. When the students don't leave, you expel them. As long as the college professors and administrators placate these people, now they're demanding amnesty, Mr. Mayor. Now they're demanding divestiture from investment in Israel. That cannot be tolerated. This is a shakedown of our American academy. What say you?
Well said. Could not have said it better. And Israel is a business partner. Some of the top startups that are really creating some major products that's helping across the entire country in general, but specifically, we get a lot of Israeli startups here in the city. And so the call for, you know, divestment and really some of the hatred and hateful terminology that are being used, it may not be illegal because the First Amendment's right, but it's immoral. It's disgusting. It's despicable. And what I believe that we should do is exactly what you stated and what we advise. I had a meeting with all the college presidents, and I stated, soon as one tent comes up, take that tent down. Don't allow it to spread, because what you will find that it will continue to multiply and spread and bring a level of disorder, and it could have the potentiality, as we saw at NYU. You know, we had an officer that had a chair thrown at his head and dented his helmet. Thank God he had a helmet on. They were throwing bottles. You cannot allow that to happen, and it's imperative that on these campuses we send the right message of what is expected behavior and what's not. And then we have to stop those who don't attend the schools. If you are suspended or expelled, you should not be back on the college grounds.
Mr. Mayor, we got 1 minute left before we have to take a network break. What would you like to tell all New Yorkers?
That we're not coming back, folks. We're back. You know, January 1st, 2022, I inherited a city with 40% increase in crime, difficult getting jobs, tourism was not here, no one wanted to be on the subway system. Our children were not learning at the level that they were supposed to. Bond raiders, those independent observers didn't get us what, didn't rate us the way we want to. 2 years later, only 2 years, more jobs in the city history. 62 million tourists, the fourth largest in history. We're outpacing the state in reading and writing. Double-digit decrease in homicides and shootings. 4.1 million people back on the subway system. We are really humming and moving in the right direction. People said we couldn't do it. They said it was going to take 5 years. We did it in 2 years. All I can say, if the jury is still out, that we've done a good job, somebody need to bring them back in the courtroom so they can say, job well done, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and we applaud you, and thank you. Keep New Yorkers safe. God bless you, and God bless New York.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Let's take that break, and we're going to come back with Mr. Chang to tell us what the heck is going on in China and the Far East.
It's a common sense recap of the big stories. It's Katz and Cosby on 77 WABC.
And we are back here on Katz and Cosby. Well, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, said he has some evidence that China is trying to influence the upcoming U.S. elections. Who better to talk about this than the great Asia expert? You can check him out on Gordon G. Chang on his Twitter. Our friend, Gordon Chang. Gordon, great to have you here. What do you think of what Blinken's saying, and how much meddling is China doing?
Well, China certainly is doing a lot of meddling. It did so in 2020 to help Biden. This time, you know, Blinken talked about this in Beijing. He was referring to Chinese efforts to help Trump. Now, I actually don't think that is going to be what China wants to do, because I believe that they probably want a continuation of 4 more years of the current president. But this is clear. One way or another, they're going to be deeply involved in this election, and they're going to be involved in state and local elections as well.
So, yeah, to what degree and how do you, what kind of capabilities do we have to stop it?
Well, they have hundreds of thousands of bots on all of these social media platforms. And we know this because the platforms themselves have talked about how many Chinese accounts that they have taken down, because they believe that they are bots and that they are part of the Chinese government and the Communist Party's efforts to influence elections. In 2020, China tried to propagate a number of themes which actually hurt President Trump. So, for instance, they were saying that he was about to invoke the Stafford Act to shut down the country, where Beijing knew that that was not going to be the case. They did that through social media platforms. They did that through text messages. The New York Times documented this. It was clear that they were going to target the then sitting president.
What about TikTok, too? Because that's the other thing that obviously the vote just came down recently, where they said, you got to sell. How big of an interference? And do you really think TikTok can be independent?
Well, TikTok can't be independent once it's owned by any Chinese entity. ByteDance is nominally private, but we know that ByteDance has been pipelining data from TikTok USA to Beijing. And we also know that the videos on TikTok that, well, for instance, just take Hamas. You were just talking about campus demonstrations. Well, the videos on Hamas on TikTok, 96.5% of them supported the terrorist group. So it's no surprise that we have these demonstrations across the United States in support of genocide that Hamas and Iran's other proxies are committing. So it's clear.
Wow, that's scary stuff. Gordon, Ed Cox is here.
So, Gordon, why is China subsidizing its strongest area, that's manufacturing? Are they looking to dump in the United States and Europe? And what's the result of that going to be?
Yes, they are looking to dump products. And they're doing this because the property sector, which once was the core of the Chinese economy, is failing. Also, Xi Jinping does not want to encourage consumption, which is really the only sustainable basis for China going forward. And the reason for that is that he doesn't want to empower consumers, and he doesn't want to actually aggravate Communist Party constituencies, which he would be doing. He'd also be weakening the state banks. You start eliminating these sectors like property and consumption, the only thing left he has is manufacturing. And so, therefore, he's doubling down on something that probably won't work because the world will not continually take Chinese products indefinitely and thereby decimate their own industries.
What about also the Chinese migrants at the border? Because what's the latest with that? We've heard some like record-breaking numbers of these well-dressed military-age guys with suitcases crossing the border. I mean, what are they doing here?
Well, we know that they're taking target practice, and this is happening across our country because we're seeing images from various locations where you have migrants who have been in our country for less than 3 weeks, who came across with no money and no documentation, have been taking target practice with pistols and sniper rifles. And this is extremely disturbing behavior. There are other things that we have seen that have led us to believe that these are saboteurs or operatives. And this means that China is putting in place the infrastructure to attack America from our own soil.
You know, I have a question. Where and how are they doing this? Where our jaws are dropping.
And how come we haven't been talking about this?
Yeah, wow.
Gordon, nobody's talking about this. This is absolutely insane.
Well, it is. And, you know, you start putting some of the pieces together. So, for instance, that lab in Reedley, California, that was discovered by the alert building inspector last spring, they found inside at least 20 pathogens, according to the official count, including the ones for Ebola. Ebola is important because we know that the Wuhan Institute of Virology is actually experimenting with Ebola to make it even more deadly. And they had almost 1,000 mice that had been genetically engineered to spread disease. So you take the migrants, some of them operatives, you link them up, they pick up the mice, they spread disease around the United States. That is something that we have to be extremely concerned about because we can see the pieces are already in place.
America under attack. Thank you, Gordon Chang, and thank you for bringing American people up to date. And what do we all stand for?
Truth, justice, and the American way.
God save the king.